Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, Dodgers baseball is in postseason form, and I got to tell you, my heart wasn't ready.
They look good, man. They, I know it was close up until the seventh inning, but they, like, a bunch of times this year, and I'm a casual baseball fan. One of the things that's actually nice with like doing Laker film room and all of what I do with covering the Lakers, one of the few things that I miss is just being like a regular fan.
Just being a fan,
you know. And so that's been really cool to get into baseball a little bit more. This year, Genie's really gotten me into the Dodgers over the last couple of years. And just like I sort of know, it was probably my best sport at playing. When I was a kid, I made like Little League All-Star teams and things like that. But as I got older, I kind of grew away from it. It's been fun to like kind of get back in and just be kind of a casual fan of something. And but even as a casual fan, it, like there were a bunch of times this year, and tonight was one of those nights where you're just like, they're better than that other team. Like baseball is cruel as hell, and that doesn't mean you're going to win a series, right? But like they seem just clearly better than the Nationals were.
Yeah, I'm still incapable of just being a fan.
Yeah.
Like if I'm watching a team, I can't help myself. I analyze what it is that I'm watching. So, I mean, the Dodgers also, I used to run Dodgers Nation, as some people might know. I did cover that team for a little bit. And then with the Vikings, you guys know, like, I can't help but get really angry at the fact that the Vikings might trade Stephon Diggs because he's annoyed with Kirk Cousins or whatever. But with the Dodgers, it is closer to just being a fan. And yeah, that was a fun, it was a fun game. And what it really got me excited about, and the reason I started here, was holy hell, I can't wait for Lakers playoff games.
Yeah, man, it's been way too long, and I was excited, man. I got to see them in person for the first time today, got some footage of it, and it's been nice. Vogel's practices have been, they've had a lot more in the way of scrimmaging in that little piece where they let the media in, and we got to see a lot of it today, so that was really cool. And here's to hoping some of these moments in a few months that the Dodgers are having right now.
I kind of feel like they're going to cut back on the scrimmagings just so you guys don't see so much of Rondo sucking. It's really hard for them to say, oh man, Rondo has really impressed out there. He's been a coach on the floor. He's done this and that and this and that. And then you walk out there and in that 12-minute video, and by the way, if you guys are interested, go check out Pete's YouTube channel to find that 12-minute video. It was kind of nice. It was like 12 minutes of like getting me really ready for Lakers basketball. But in that 12-minute video, you had Rondo turnovers, you had Rondo missed defensive assignments, you had like everything that we're concerned about, it popped up right there. And that's been the case. Like that's what Harrison has said, is that like they'll walk in there and it'll be, yeah, Avery Bradley knocks the ball loose from Rondo. Alex Caruso just dribbles right around Rondo. And like, I'm wondering eventually if the Lakers just going to say, like, okay, shooting drills only, last 15 minutes of practice.
Yeah, man, I hate to beat the dead horse of Rondo. Lord knows that we've gone into this over and over again. But seeing it again and seeing it in the context of a better team than last year, a more veteran team, he just sticks out even more than he did before, right? And so it was, yeah, that was one of the, I mean, my takeaways, one of the writers asked, so Pete, what do you think? I was like, Rajon Rondo is bad and Anthony Davis is good. That is my analysis.
Which of those is easier to see?
Yeah, man. AD, whew, that dude is like, poor Devontae Kaycock was the one responsible for guarding him on a few of those possessions. And it was just like, yeah, he's so smooth. Like, a dude his size, I haven't seen much of Durant in person, but just like amongst, we were talking about this the other day about how we're like barely the same species as these guys, right? Like as amongst guys who are just insane in their ability to be so tall and big, but also graceful, he stands out in being tall and big and graceful amongst them. Yeah. You know what I mean? So he's just unbelievable in person, man. I just can't wait for this season.
It was funny. There were a few possessions in that clip that you were able to grab for everybody. And oh, by the way, you're the MVP of practice today, dude, holding that camera up there for 12 straight minutes.
So no, that was edited together. You're actually going to laugh at this. So it's sometimes they'll say, like, be there at 12:30, and the media room opens at noon. Well, this is the first time, you know, I was helping my dad move the last couple of days, and so this is my first time there. I'll get there at 12, you know, socialize with people and whatnot. We didn't actually get into the gym until, like, 1:30, and so, like, we're all kind of waiting around, and then they've got that long scrimmage going on, right? And I cut out, like, the dead parts in between. Jason Kidd called, like, four timeouts to get the ball inbounded badly. And just all of, so what I ended up doing was, you know, LeBron came out and he was in a pissy mood and kind of dunked on Harrison, which was fun. Did you see that,
by the way? I didn't see it. I saw that he was in kind of a pissy mood. He got really angry at Bill Orem, was the exchange, yeah. I saw.
I don't understand what LeBron's deal. Like, there are just some days where he's like that, and since he's LeBron James, everyone. Well, no, they lost because they did a, like, last 2 minutes of the game drill, and so the game started with them down by three, right? And so they did lose it technically, but that wasn't like a full game of the full scrimmage. There, his team won that. But yeah, LeBron just gets like that sometimes. And I think it's super lame. I don't get it. But anyway, LeBron comes out and, you know, he does his thing, and then Vogel comes out, and, you know, I have, like, these six videos that total this, like, 12 minutes, and I'm like, who's next? And they're like, I think Rondo's coming over. I'm like, I'm gonna go patch these together for y'all. I don't need to talk to him. So
it's a good thing you did too, because apparently he made everybody wait like an hour, and then also was a dick. Yeah,
that's true. It actually, everybody else didn't come into the press room until right about, I was about to leave. It took me like 30 minutes to, you know, kind of patch those together. So yeah, now it, and maybe this is that type of team from a media availability standpoint, which is fine. Just, like, freaking win games. I don't care if you're dicks. Just, like, just be good for once.
Yeah.
And I'll be fine.
Yeah. But the AD thing, I want to go back to that. I want to talk about that here in a second, because there was another thing that I really noticed in the video that you took, having to do with their defense and AD specifically. So when we come back, we'll talk about that. I can't believe I'm that fan with the Dodgers that I'm like, okay, yeah, they won game one, but, like, it's hard for me to get up for, like, a game one win when I just won a World Series, man. Like, we've been here before, and I hate that fan. I hate that guy. But here I am, and it's just funny, the different expectations I have for the Dodgers was like, you guys better win the damn championship. With the Lakers, I'm like, just don't piss me off. Please. You know? But to get back to the video that you dropped today, and again, if you want to find it, it's on Pete's YouTube channel. Search Laker Film Room. The first thing you mentioned to me when I hopped on here today, or we hopped on here today, was about the defense and how much everybody was communicating. And AD specifically really stuck out to me with how much he was talking out there. For some reason, he doesn't really strike me as that kind of a player, but if you're going to be the kind of defensive presence that he is, that's one of the things that kind of goes without saying or should be an expectation. But he really blew me away with that. That was great to hear.
Yeah, no, that's the back end guys, all of them, AD, JaVale, Dwight. I don't think JaVale was out there today, but Dwight was, he may have been, I think he was on the far side, but yeah, that, like, a lot of talking, a lot of LeBron was very vocal.
Yeah.
You know, calling out pin down screens and, you know, just, yeah, that the defense is ahead of the offense right now, which is probably to be expected considering that's what they've worked on. And that's not uncommon in the NBA. Yeah. But I'm impressed by where the defense is at this point in camp. They further along than I would have expected them to be, even as a veteran team. So that's definitely exciting.
Is the defense farther ahead or further ahead than you would expect it to be, or is it a benefactor of going up against, like, the offense where it is right now? Because that's where I always kind of get hung up on in expectations and analyzing training camp with where it is right now.
Yeah, Harrison and I were talking about this today. I think it was more good defense than bad offense. Okay. And it's definitely bad offense in part. But I do think that it's more like, and reason being, it's like, so the first element of that being the communication, right? This is the screen. This is the pick and roll coverage. So a lot of times you'll hear ice, ice, or weak, weak. Weaking a screen is similar to ice in terms of how you want the guard to defend the pick and roll when it's at the top of the key. Mm-hmm. And it's usually your backline guys, your bigs, calling that out, making sure you guys are on the same page.
Or they were just yelling like, Rondo has the ball. He's weak. He's weak.
Friggin' Anthony. So the communicating that stuff and then acting upon it was really quick in person. And so that's something that even if you're now, you know, a great player may still hit the shot if you, you know, execute your defense really well like that. But just everything was quick. There weren't like, and I do a decent job of being able to see like, hey, this was open and the player just missed the read or, you know, it was an open shot and they missed the shot. The offense is very vanilla, like, It's not good by any means at this point, but it's like, this is what everybody runs type of stuff.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, it stood out to me more that it was good defense than bad offense.
That's good. That's good. It's a question that you know, you guys are going to roll your eyes as Anthony being negative, as Anthony being pessimistic or whatever, but like, that's the follow-up you have to ask there is the defense as good as it looks right now because of where the offense is, or could the Lakers just have a really good defense? And by the way, like, they have the pieces to be able to be a pretty good defense. Like, there's reason to believe in what they can be defensively. In terms of quotes and stuff said after practice, as you said, everybody was in kind of a mood. So the quotes weren't phenomenal. But LeBron was asked about playing point guard and all these things. And his exact quote, I can pull it up here. His exact quote was something along the lines of, here you go. It doesn't matter to me. I'll do whatever it takes for us to win. I'm a ball player. I'm not a point guard. I'm not a shooting guard. I'm not a small forward, a power forward, or a center. I'm just a ball player. You put me on the floor, and I can make things happen, whoever is out on the floor. I'm just looking to get out there with my teammates because this is exciting and it's fun. Good to know LeBron plays basketball and knows all the positions. But so I think that's the quote he has to give there, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he can't say anything other than that, or else we immediately get the – like, if he says, no, man, I should have the ball, right? Then it's, okay, now you got Coach LeBron, and that's the response to it. But in the back of my mind, I do wish he would have said, no, I should have the ball in my hands. Because he was asked about playing on or off the ball, and Frank Vogel was kind of asked about this to a certain extent as well, about being on or having LeBron on or off the ball. And again, they said the right things. They are the objectively right things to say there. But let's not overthink this again. Let's have LeBron on the ball.
Absolutely. And I thought Vogel made an astute observation in that, like, when you think of shot creation, part of the value of having Anthony Davis is that, you know, LeBron can take some plays off, even if he is the only, and say you've got a lineup of LeBron, AD, and then like Danny Green, KCP, and who's another like shooter? Let's say Quinn Cook, right? Mm-hmm. So just guys who are not really ball handlers, creator types. Although Quinn, I think Cook has a little bit of that in his game, but guys where you don't have much in the way of shot creation around those two guys. Like, you can give the ball to AD, and he's got some playmaking ability, and I've been talking that up over this offseason. But like, kind of in along the lines of what we saw today, AD is one of those handful of guys in the NBA where, like, just give them the ball, and like, they don't even really have to pass, and it's the good possession. Still, he's one of those types of dudes, right? So LeBron can take some plays off, kind of, right? Like, there were a couple times where he just, you know, gave a post entry to AD in the mid post and, you know, cut to the other side of the court. That's a very low impact type of play. Is he creating a play on that? No. Is AD creating a shot for somebody else? He could, but not on those plays. But AD can still get you 40 in that type of style. Mm-hmm. And alleviate some of the pressure off of LeBron, where LeBron has to make it happen every play. So even though AD's not this great playmaker for others, he can still take some of that responsibility from LeBron. And Vogel talked about that a little bit today. A lot of what Vogel said, I've been like kind of nodding my head to. So that's encouraging.
Yeah, I like the idea of anytime LeBron and Anthony Davis are on the court together and Davis has the ball anywhere near the block, right? Any kind of a post possession. Put LeBron on the opposite wing, and even if it is, you know, a play that he's taking off, the defense has to honor him. Like, they can't just lose sight of him completely. And if that ball does swing over there, LeBron's in a position where he's a decision maker, and that's where you want LeBron to be on a basketball court. So right. I like that. I saw a couple, you know, plays that ended up in that positioning where it was Anthony Davis, I believe it was on the right side of the court if you're looking at the basket on the block, and LeBron was on the opposite left, you know, on the left wing, and you had a shooter in the corner, and if that shooter is Danny Green, then AD has a ton of space on that side of the floor, right? They can't leave completely Danny Green. They can't leave completely LeBron James. It's just a matter of who else is on the court there. Like, your point guard, if it's Avery Bradley or if it's Rajon Rondo, well, they're going to sink in from you know, wherever those guys are. But if that point guard is Quinn Cook or if it's a Troy Daniels, even if it's a KCP who is playing the pseudo point guard, like, that's you're getting to a point now where you're demanding of a defense to pick and choose what they're guarding. And that's the best thing you can do from an offensive perspective.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
The other thing that stuck out for me today from Frank Vogel was him talking about the way he's going to build lineups and rotations and stuff like that, and staggering Anthony Davis and staggering LeBron James and staggering Rajon Rondo. I found that interesting. I'm going to make a plea to Frank Vogel, but we're going to do that on the other side of the break. So one of the reasons I really enjoy writing at Silver Screen and Roll and for Harrison specifically is because at this point I've developed enough trust where I get away with things with him that I would definitely not get away with other editors. Here's something I wrote. I actually wound up using it twice. But last season, among pairings that played at least 600 minutes together, lineups featuring both Rondo and James held a net rating of negative 5.4, making them the seventh worst tandem on last year's roster. Rondo was easily James' worst teammate in terms of rating last season, and is the only Laker to play alongside him and hold a negative net rating. The reason I bring that up is because Frank Vogel was asked today about staggering LeBron and staggering Anthony Davis. And then, you know, he also brought up Rajon Rondo. And the way that you utilize Rondo where he is least negatively impactful is if you stagger him with LeBron and use him alongside Anthony Davis. And now you have at least that kind of a creator out there. My question to you, Pete, is, like, I think we're in agreement that Davis and James, one of those guys, should be on the court at all times, right? Mm-hmm. But if you had to give up, say, a couple minutes of those guys not being on the court for a stretch, for an extra couple minutes of having them on the court at the same time, how would you balance that if you were in charge of the minutes here?
So I would prioritize having one on the court for all 48 just because there's such a drop off in terms of shot creators beyond them that, you know, I think on other teams, if the Lakers had a, you know, viable point guard or a starting caliber point guard, that was one thing that stood out to me in this in the scrimmage today, is just like the lack of guard play. Just seeing it in person was like, oh yeah, that's what that's going to look like. So I really think that one of them needs to be on the court, so I would, you know, sway heavily toward that. If not, gosh, that's probably your best argument for Rondo, right? As a guy who can create shots for other people, because you're going to start having lineups where it's like, hey, how do we get a shot out of this? But again, you know, we saw a little bit of that today. If you watch that scrimmage video, Rajon Rondo is very much the running the offense for the white squad. Mm-hmm. And you saw the difficulties that they had, just not scoring, but getting quality looks up in the first place.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I hate to be so simple about it, but I just think it's a bad idea to not have one of them dudes on the court.
No, I didn't ask a question with, you know, hoping you were going to lean one way or the other. I agree completely that the team, if you have a team with the Anthony Davis and LeBron James, having lineups where either of those guys aren't on the court is malpractice, right? Because what's the point of having those guys on your team if they're going to be sitting side by side on the bench? Like, that's not going to end up really well. And if, especially on a team like the Lakers are currently built, that the third best player is not, like, Danny Green's a really good third best player, really good role player, but he doesn't create for anybody.
Right.
Your third best player doesn't have any creative chops there. You have to go all the way down to your 17th best player to get to Rajon Rondo, who has creative chops.
You know, one thing, if I could jump in, yeah, Kuz has flashes of that, right? Yeah. So there is some universe where we get that 8-assist Kuz, right, where mm-hmm. he's that dual threat. Because part of what you need is you need a guy to be able to be a scoring threat as well. That's the problem with Rondo, right?
Yes.
And that's why he'll end up, you know, if you watch that scrimmage tape, there's a lot of, like, Rondo floaters and, you know, shots like that where it's like stay home with everybody else and let him try to do it. Kuzma's a guy who – theoretically has some of that potential to do both, and then other guys can function off of that. So if there's a version of it, it has to be with him on the court.
Yep, I agree. All right, so two last things here before we send everybody off into the weekend. One, next time we talk, we'll have already watched our first Laker game.
Yay!
I'm stoked on that. Is there anything specifically that you're looking for most in by the time you guys are listening to this tomorrow's game?
I'm going to be looking at the defensive coverages. I didn't get a chance to ask him today, but tomorrow I'm going to ask Vogel about. He made a comment about how, you know, he's going to be able. They have a scheme that's going to keep the defensive bigs, the rim protectors, around the hoop as much as possible. And I think he means Dwight and JaVale, probably less AD on that. I'm going to be watching, like, the defensive coverages. Like, how does that look in terms of, because the, you know, LeBron might not play. There's, you know, if he does, you're not going to get many minutes from the main guys, but just kind of what strategically Vogel is going for, especially on the defensive end. And then just like the sets that they'll be running, but they'll mostly be, you know, very basic. Everybody runs this type of stuff, type of plays. So really I'm going to be keeping an eye on the defensive coverages. What about you?
Honestly, I'm going to be just like sitting there giggling like a jackass about AD being in a Laker uniform. Like, that's my top priority, is just to enjoy. Because, look, it's the first preseason game. LeBron has already said that they aren't going to play him very much this preseason, you know. So, and you know, one thing that I felt like was done, or I was guilty of it as well, last year was, you know, expect too much out of a preseason game from LeBron James. So I'm just going to enjoy that aspect of it. It's also on a Saturday night, which helps because we don't do a show right afterward. I think that's actually going to help us a little bit. But in terms of things that I'm really going to, like, we need to find out as quickly as possible what Alex Caruso is. Like, we need to know this. Like, on right now, he's this cult hero. He's fun to joke about. He's open to the memes. He murdered Kevin Durant on national TV, right? Like, it's fun to hold him in that regard. But in terms of what's useful for the Lakers, we need to know really quickly what he is. So I kind of want to see, like, how does he look out there with expectations this year? We know he's going to regress from how he shot the ball at the end of last season, but what does that actually look like? Where does he actually fall in terms of his shooting ability? So that's that, you know, other than just enjoy Anthony Davis, what is Alex Caruso?
I'd throw Avery Bradley into that fold too, for different reasons, but they're in similar, like, is this going to be the guy that breaks out type of territory? They're both hugely important to what this season can be.
Yep. All right. We have a couple questions here before we got to get out. So first off, this kind of has to do with something we've touched on throughout the show, and I think it has to do with expectations. It's a longer question. But basically, somebody was asking, like, why they part of the question was, why are they down? They feel like they should be more excited about this season than they are. Have you felt that at all? Or is it just like,
no, I totally get it.
Yeah, I
totally
get it. I get it too, and I can't quite explain it.
I've said this on the LFR pod a few times. It feels like right now, it feels like we're watching other teams' players, right? Yeah. Like even LeBron, right? Like LeBron doesn't feel like a Laker to me yet. Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis, you know, a lot of the kids are gone. Danny Green, like these are all great to good players, right? Like they did a good job of putting this team together. It just doesn't feel like, I can't think of another Laker team that was like that. We always had somebody who was homegrown, you know, whether it was, you know, when we signed Shaq, yeah, we had Shaq, but we also had Van Exel and Eddie and Sabalos for 8 games and Eldon and, you know, and then, you know, those guys got traded, but we still had Kobe, right? And like these guys that we've had investments in for a while, there are very few guys like that on the team. Really, Kuz is the only guy like that. Caruso started to emerge, but yeah, Kuz is like the one dude that we have some type of investment in beyond the last year, really. Mm-hmm. And I think that that probably feeds into it deeply. And, you know, if you've mentioned this before, if you talk to Cleveland guys, you know, they talk about how this is kind of part of the deal with LeBron, right? Is it's not the most fun. For me, it's going to be very fun if we're a winning team. I don't care. LeBron can be surly in every media availability that he wants to be, just win some freaking games. Mm-hmm. But I think that that has a big part of it. Does that ring true at all with you, or do you think that there are other elements to it?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's funny. The Lakers keep talking about this culture that they want to sell, and it's culture this and it's culture that. But what's their culture right now? Their culture is we are going to do whatever it takes to land our two superstars. And then from there, we are going to identify completely with whatever it is that the two superstars want us to be, right? We don't know what that necessarily is quite yet. So I think that's a factor. And also, like the other thing that I kind of mentioned, because I answered this in passing a little bit, but once you get hurt the way that last season hurt, it's hard for you to just throw yourself out there immediately the following season and just say, like, I'm going to now.
That's really good.
I'm now completely open to whatever it is the world has to offer. Like, that was a giant kick in the balls. And then that was supposed to be the payoff to the six prior kick in the balls that the six seasons before that had been, right? So you know, now I'm wearing a cup. now I'm like, so I don't know how to feel about this.
That's such a great point, dude. Like, I would love to come into this season more. Like, I am excited, but it's a different type of, like, it's less of like a unbridled giddiness and like, UMFers better not let me down. Like, it's like, it has this anxiety right to it that can only be alleviated by, you know, a good start to the season. I don't think it's like I'll be this way all year, but, you know, Lakers start out 10-4 or something. Yeah, I'll be like, all right, I'm ready to go, you know.
But I've been a fan all along. Never got it once.
But you put it perfectly. It's like, I've been hurt before, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. There's one more question here. And it has to do with Vogel specifically. Yeah. And there's a question about it. So Carl in the East writes, you're right in that Vogel clearly has no political power on this team, which is clearly evident in the statement about Rondo being a really good fit. It's mind-meltingly contradictory to claim to be so focused and hell-bent on playing defense at an elite level while also attempting to justify Rondo as your starting point guard or your starting point of attack defender. My question is this. Do you think this is going to be a question he's asked? And if he's asked, what will Vogel's response be? So you know this as well as I do. You can't ask a coach about like their coaching ability, right? Because as soon as they feel that, they're going to shut down and they aren't going to want to work with you for the rest of the season. So no, to answer the actual question, nobody is going to ask Vogel, hey, Rondo is bad, why do you keep playing him? It's going to be a version of it, but it's not going to be that direct. But my question to you, Pete, is like, I'll put you in that spot. You are tasked with getting an answer out of Vogel in this spot. Rondo is the worst net rating player in NBA history. The Lakers are winning, albeit, but Rondo is what we think he might be heading into this year. Yet Vogel continues to play him and all of these things. So how would you ask Vogel about that relationship and that decision?
So I think you have to start with establishing facts, and like, so you can criticize and you can, you can be confrontational is maybe a strong word, but you can address these sorts of things. But it's important that you establish, like, a lot of times questions get asked with presumptions that are inaccurate, right? Mm-hmm. And so you'll see a player or a coach be like, well, that's not really like, you know, that the pretense of your question I don't agree with, so I can't really answer the question because that's the pretense is off. So I think the listener, the phrasing that they used, that's the way I will go about it. If Rondo plays and if he's bad on defense, then asking about the point of attack issues. And one of the great things about film is I don't have to talk in these generalities. I can be like, you know, 10:30 left in the second quarter, he gets blown by, you know, this guy, or, you know, and even use less pejorative language than that. Like, you know, there were a couple plays in a row where, you know, Victor Oladipo got by Rondo. Is this, you know, what impact does that have on your defense? And is that something that can be addressed? What can Rondo do better to stay in front of his man, right? Because if you can talk specifics, that's the best way to criticize or to get those type of questions out there. Not in this like, oh, Rondo's a bad defender in a general sense, right? Like, well, on these plays, this was an issue. And then he can disagree with that pretense. And then even if that's the case, then it's at least an interesting argument. Well, why am I wrong about him getting beaten at the point of attack? You know, or he can say that's, you know, I want him to funnel into the bigs and all of that. There are different interesting versions of directions where that can go. But if Rondo plays big minutes and he plays the way that he did last year, we'd be irresponsible to not, you know, to not go down that route. And yes, you have to be diplomatic to some degree, but you also can't just like dance around it and act like it doesn't exist.
Yeah, because the more dancing you do, the more, the higher that likelihood becomes that they lose the question in the frustration of waiting for it to be asked in the first place. Right.
That's right. And do you remember there was a game against Memphis, and it was as the season was like circling down the drain, and LeBron was like in the paint, and Bruno Caboclo hit a three to put them up from like 4-7. It was like the backbreaking shot. And like I tweeted it out, and it had gone kind of viral elsewhere. You know, that play of, oh, look, this is LeBron playing bad defense. And by like going through the specifics, all right, you know, 1:30 left in the fourth, Kuz stunts over, you know, Luke gave a really interesting answer to that, right? And but we lingered on that. We lingered on that play for a while, and like those things have to happen, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, but that is, I think, how you do it. And I think approaching it from a basketball perspective as opposed to a narrative perspective is that's when you get the best answers out of the coaches and players on these things.
Yeah, and look, I don't say this to Pat, me or Pete or any of like these kind of new age reporters or cover, you know, the people who cover the sports who come from differing backgrounds. But one of my favorite things over the course of my career to this point has been these types of questions getting asked, right, in the first place. Because I remember when I first started doing this, I would be pulling my hair out. Like, how were you going to talk to Byron Scott about his relationship with D'Angelo Russell, hear him say that that Russell hasn't earned the right to talk to you, and not follow up on it, right? Like I remember that specifically. I was being driven insane by it. And it's not to say that like we are God's gift to covering these sports, but I do believe that as a result of, you know, people from different backgrounds, those kinds of relationship building, because that's what it is you don't want to piss off Byron Scott because you don't want to lose that relationship. Some of those relationship question, you know, the not asking questions as a form of maintaining a relationship with somebody you need to work with or maybe need sourcing from, whatever, right? That stuff, I feel like, at least on this beat specifically, has been kind of mitigated against. There are better questions at these scrums where they are worth paying attention to at the end of the game. And it's been fun to watch that take place over the course of the last like 7 years or so. And I also think that it's made the reporters who do come from traditional backgrounds, I think they've become better at it. And also, I think the people that are getting these questions asked of them are doing a much better job of answering those questions. Like they were getting off easy for a really, really long time. And it wasn't something that, you know, it was just like, okay, yeah, you'll finish the game, answer your four softball questions, call it a night or whatever. Now they are being held, those feet are being held to the fire a little bit more, and I think everybody stands to benefit from it. Fans get more insight. There's better understanding between fan base and team, and fan base and coach, and fan base and player. And I just think, as somebody who comes from PR, that kind of honesty is just it's really important. So, all right. That'll do it for this week's, and you know, we said it last week, officially the last show of the off season, but this is it. This is it. We got a game tomorrow, man. This is exciting. Oh man, I'm so stoked.
I'm in that guarded, like, yes, I'm excited, but I've been hurt before. Like, so, but basketball is back. Like, we will see the purple and gold playing basketball again, and that's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm just happy that, you know, this is the best time of year. You got baseball playoffs going on. Football is in full swing. Basketball is back. Even soccer is back across the Atlantic. It's great.
NHL, yeah.
NHL is back too. All of this. So October babies are the best. And I'm not biased at all when I say that. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And we'll talk to you on Monday.